I'm tempted to declare this episode of this show as a celebration because Justin Houston's going to be a Chief for the distant future. However, I want us to all take a moment and let's really sympathize with a certain band of Chiefs fans that we all know. John Dorsey signed Jeremy Maclin. They brought in a new offensive line. They traded a fifth-round pick for Ben Grubbs. The draft went quite well. They signed Justin Houston. The arrow is pointing up for this Chiefs team. So for the special circle of Chiefs fans that we all know, they're running out of things to complain about. So I just want to make sure we don't leave them out to dry. Eventually, guys, don't worry about it. I'm sure you'll be able to find something new to gripe about very, very soon. On this episode of Ref the Kicker, I'm Joshua Briscoe, and I'm going to talk about the numbers and the meaning behind Justin Houston's historic new contract, look into the future of upcoming Chiefs free agents, going to look into Tom Bahali's comments about Dee Ford and Dee Ford's future. We'll discuss one factor that Pro Football Focus brought out that I think most impacts Alex Smith's performance and what could make him a top 10 quarterback or about the 25th best quarterback in the league next season. And I also want to address the idea that the Chiefs are just one piece away from becoming a dynasty based off of a national article. I'm really excited for this show, and I just want you all to know that if you need something to complain about, maybe come back in a few weeks. Let's kick off this stunningly positive show with the Justin Houston news that we've all heard about for the last several days. Now, as of Tuesday, there were reports coming out that the Chiefs in Houston were rekindling their contract talks. There hadn't been much on that front for several weeks. Everything had been very low-key, not a whole lot to be excited about. But on Wednesday was the deadline to sign a franchise player, and every big-name franchise player, every franchise player except for one, the one without a finger, Jason Pierre-Paul, ended up getting a deal done. We'll talk about those at the very end of the show. But for Justin Houston, Wednesday morning, I tweeted over on Twitter at JB Briscoe, where if you want to get involved in this show, have a conversation, we'll do it there. Or we can do it here in the comments on Arrowhead Addict. Always want to get you involved there as well. But I tweeted Wednesday morning that I thought a deal would get done because of two things. Because of the reports that the talks were happening, and because it was so quiet. If there was some dissension between the two teams, if Houston felt like he was getting a raw deal or the Chiefs felt like they couldn't get anything from the Houston camp, there would have been things you would have heard about. It would have been played out through the media. That happens so frequently where something gets quote-unquote leaked to some sources. Sources say there was none of that with the Chiefs on Tuesday night. And then Ian Rappaport said after the deal, he said, how quiet was the deal between the Chiefs and Justin Houston? The agreement was actually struck last night, Tuesday night, finalized today, Wednesday. This is how the Chiefs right now with John Dorsey are doing business. This is such a breath of fresh air if you want to harken back to the Scott Pioli days where everything felt like it was played out either so silently and then nothing good happened or someone left a candy wrapper and we got to hear that news story. But now, let's get into the numbers. Justin Houston signs a $101 million deal, 6 years. His signing bonus was $20.5 million. $32.5 million of it is fully guaranteed. $52.5 million of it in total guarantees, covering injuries and whatnot. Albert Breer tweeted the total cash flow for Justin Houston, $21.5 million in 2015, $36.5 million through 2 years, $53 through 3, $68 through 4, $83.5 million through 5, and $101 million over 6. Let's figure out what those numbers actually mean. Now, these numbers I'm about to use are coming from overthecap.com. Now, Breer said that Houston's cash flow in 2015 is $21.5 million, but his actual cap number is only $5.1 million. We'll talk about what the Chiefs are going to do with that money for this year in a little bit. But his cap number this year is $5.1 million. Then it's $19.1 million in 2016, $20 million in 2017, $19.1 again in 2018, $19.6 in 2019, and 17.5 in 2020. Now, those are cap numbers. Now, here's what that means even beyond that. Now, his signing bonus, Justin Houston's signing bonus, is $20.5 million. Now, what that equates to is through 2019, remember, the deal goes through 2020. Through 2019, Justin Houston gets $4.1 million as that signing bonus that just it gets paid out prorated through those years. Now, if you cut out that 2020 deal, which you can essentially, if you follow like the NBA, where there are a lot of player options or team options, you can basically qualify the 2020 year of Houston's deal as a team option. The only thing, there's no money guaranteed there, and if they were to cut Justin Houston before 2020, there'd be $0 in dead money, and they would save $17.5 million against the cap. So, if Justin Houston, if he drops off by 2020, the Chiefs could just let him go for no penalty. What that would equate to then is what this deal actually is. is $83.5 million for 5 years with a team option for the sixth year. So stop, get the one out, $101 million can go to the side for now, $83.5 million for 5 years. Now, in 2019, the fifth year of the deal, thinking about how the Chiefs cut Dwayne Bowe before this season, dead money, they kept dead money to get a little bit of cap space. In 2019, the Chiefs could cut Justin Houston and save over, because they $15.5 million in cap space for just $4 million in dead money. Now, I know this is morbid talking about when the Chiefs would release Justin Houston, but I just want to make sure everyone can understand how this cap situation is playing out. So that way, the deal then turns into 4 years for $68 million with $4 million in dead cap money for 2019. So it's not these 6 years, $101 million that it looks like at first. Like when people saw that Albert Haynesworth deal, it was never going to be that much. Just like Colin Kaepernick's not going to make $100 million in his contract. It'll be restructured or something will happen before Justin Houston sees $17.5 million in 2020. So $101 million over 6 years, or it really becomes 5 years for $83.5 million. How do the Chiefs and Justin Houston get to that point? Well, Rappaport also tweeted, Justin Houston is a case study on betting on himself. Turned down a solid deal in October, nearly set the sack record, made himself millions. There's a lot of conversation, and fair conversation, saying that the Chiefs could have saved themselves millions and millions of dollars if they would have gotten a deal done with Justin Houston last year. Now, if you look at this deal now, where Justin Houston's going to make an average of 19-ish million dollars through every year of his deal outside of this one, which is, again, the cap number's different, but say $19 million or so throughout the rest of his deal. If the Chiefs would have offered him $14 or $15 million a year as of last year's cut for last year's deal, also paying him more last year, or even this or the last offseason, you would think that Justin Houston would have taken that. It would be hard to say he turned down that deal. Rappaport says he turned down a solid deal. Also, we all thought very highly of Justin Houston going into last season, but I'm not sure if everyone would have been on board for a $14 million per year deal before last season came around. I would have been, especially knowing the situation with Tom Bahaly and Dee Ford coming in. But I can see the argument against that. I don't hate the Chiefs waited. Now, obviously, it would be much better for the team if they could have gotten a deal done and not had to give up this much money to Houston now. But he did now, and now, I guess just for a side segment here of just my opinion, this is a great thing for the Chiefs and a great thing for Justin Houston. Talked a lot of numbers, I guess, to talk about what I actually think. The Chiefs, at this point, look, if they could have gotten a deal done last year, that would have been much better. That's obvious. We can all say that and understand that going forward. However, just taking it from the end of last season, when Justin Houston nearly set the single-season sack record, this is a good thing for the Chiefs. The defense falls apart without him, and I've talked about this. If you want to hear more about what could have happened if the Chiefs hadn't signed Justin Houston, I talked about that on last week's show on Arrowhead Addict, or you can look it up on iTunes. It'll be there. The future of this Chiefs defense without Justin Houston was very bleak. Now, they have lots of great pieces, but Justin Houston's the most important thing on this defense, and it's not even close. I love Dontari Poe. Dontari Poe's impact is not half of Justin Houston's. The threat that he is on that outside, his ability to get to the passer, is enormous. The most important position in football is obviously the quarterback. I think the second most important position is the guy who can get to the quarterback. That's what Justin Houston specializes in. He does so many things so well. Yes, it's a lot of money, but this Chiefs team needs him there, and this Chiefs team is a real, real contender with this defense, including Justin Houston, in a way where I'm not sure they would have been if you would have seen Dee Ford starting in Justin Houston's place this season. Justin Houston is that big of a deal, and I'll be singing the same tune if Justin Houston were to get hurt or something in week 4. I would back off of this Chiefs team pretty strongly because Justin Houston is that important. He is $19 million a year important. He's the second most important position on the field, I would argue, and he's the best player in football at that. Diving back into the numbers for a couple other comparisons with some prime NFL players, top of their positions, as Justin Houston is, Justin Houston has $32.5 million guaranteed. Darrelle Revis just got $39 million guaranteed, and Ndamukong Suh got $60 million guaranteed, fully guaranteed from the Miami Dolphins. J.J. Watt is at $30.87 million guaranteed. So Justin Houston gets a little bit more than Watt does, but far less than Suh and a little less than Revis. The important thing here is Houston and Watt are staying with their current teams. If Justin Houston or J.J. Watt ever hit the open market like Ndamukong Suh did, some team with some cap money and a defense they really need to spice up would give up Ndamukong Suh-style money for those two guys. So, again, even though the Chiefs are giving up a ton of money for Justin Houston, and we want to believe that they could have had him for less last season, it would be even more astronomical if he actually truly ever hit free agency in his prime. And this deal will take him, if he were to play all six, I believe, to age 31, which is how old Tom Bahali is right now, or in reality, with that team option aspect, to age 30. So Justin Houston's getting a nice payday now. He'll probably get another pretty nice one whenever his next deal comes down. Hopefully that's also with the Chiefs, and that he continues to play at this level. But now we get to look at the other things that the Justin Houston contract does, like the cap situation for the Chiefs. Before Justin Houston's contract, the Chiefs had the littlest cap space in the NFL, I believe with just a few $100,000, which is absolutely minute. Also, keeping in mind that this was only counting a certain number of players, I believe the top 50 or 51 players, and once the actual season comes around, the cap number needs to include the 53-man roster. I wish I had both those numbers exact and right in front of me. I don't currently. What I do have in front of me, though, is again from overthecap.com, the Chiefs now have $8.9 million in cap space. That puts them, it looks like, just about inside the top half of the league. Well, actually, just the bottom half, probably. Right in the middle of the pack. Now, what this means, there is talk again about Evan Mathis. The Chiefs could use this money to go get Evan Mathis. They could. However, the next thing I want to talk about, future Chiefs free agents, I would not want to bring in Evan Mathis into that cocktail. However, what this does for the Chiefs, certainly, it allows them to keep Chase Daniel if they believe that he is the number two quarterback, that much ahead of Aaron Murray, and needs to be behind Alex Smith. It allows them to continue to pay the guys on that 53-man roster, which I think will probably kick up about $2 million they will have to have. Then they can be carrying around six or seven, very ballpark, but say $6 million into the season in case injuries come around and they need to make any midseason signings. Or what I think actually will happen is something we've seen John Dorsey do a lot of so far this time with the Chiefs, is he signs and searches through players that are cut by those top-tier teams. If a team has a wealth of, say, cornerbacks, he went out and got Marcus Cooper, who ended up playing a very big role in that first year he was with the Chiefs. Now Cooper might not make the team. That's okay. That's just the churning of the roster that John Dorsey is so good at. But so, expect to see once cuts start coming down, the Chiefs are going to be going and getting those guys where there's a little bit of competition and a little bit of a contract boost here and there, or the idea of playing for a contender, which the Chiefs are, is going to be something that can really give the Chiefs an edge over another team trying to get, again, maybe some offensive line, some real offensive line competition. If the Chiefs are unimpressed with Donald Stevenson at right tackle, we might see the Chiefs have their week six starting tackle be picked up and signed right towards the end of training camp as cuts are coming around or through the first few weeks of the preseason. So don't expect Evan Mathis. I'd still love to see a guy like James Jones, or specifically James Jones, come into this Chiefs wide receiver battle. But don't expect this to go straight into Evan Mathis or some free agent that we've all heard of. I think we're going to see this money go into the guys that need to be on the roster to get the cap all squared away, plus whatever John Dorsey wants to do as players are trying to get released as the preseason games are coming around. So I think we'll see the Chiefs sit tight with this cap money for now. I could be very wrong in Evan Mathis, but I don't think I will be, and I'm sort of rooting against the Chiefs to go after Evan Mathis because I believe in Zach Fulton, which you've ever heard in this show, you've heard me say hundreds of times. But that Mathis issue also plays into the future of the Chiefs, their cap number spilling into the next couple of years. And I want to actually take a second to interrupt myself and say, there's a lot of cap talk. We've had a lot of cap talk this offseason with, you know, Grubbs and Houston and Alex Smith and where all those numbers coming through, Jeremy Maclin. And in a lot of cases, this is stuff that I know a lot of people think fans don't need to know about, and that's true. The cap number isn't the Chiefs fans' general problem. However, Arrowhead Addicts specifically, and the Chiefs fan base as a whole, I think is a very intelligent group of fans who, if you can know about these things, it's good to know about. You know the intricacies of the NFL, unlike most NFL fans. To be able to have a feel for the cap, it keeps the conversation smart, in my opinion, to where we can all talk about the future of the Chiefs and where they go and saying, well, yeah, just sign Travis Kelce and Justin Houston and Jamal Charles and Jeremy Maclin and all of these and Dontari Poe to the massive deals that they want, and we'll just make everything else work. Because we all understand that it's more complicated than that. That's why you see guys walk. You see guys who could have been contributors, maybe like Sean Smith, as I think will probably leave after next season, or after this season, will probably leave. Not because he doesn't deserve some money to be the number one or two corner on a team, but because it's too complex for that. So I think that if I can help share this information with an already smart Chiefs fan base, I'm glad to do that. Now, once the season comes around and we're talking about actual football, the cap talk is going to go away, and I'm going to be very happy for that as well, because I'd rather talk about real football. But as far as the cap goes and contracts and everything, during this offseason, I like to think this fan base continues to become more and more educated and have a better feel for how the entire NFL actually operates. With that being said, let's look even farther into the future. Brandon Kiley at BK Sports Talk has done a fantastic job tweeting all through the Justin Houston saga that was happening this week. So, and he pointed out these couple of things, and I agree with him in a huge way. Chiefs top free agents in 2016, Eric Berry, Sean Smith, Derek Johnson, Chase Daniel, Mike DeVito, Donald Stevenson, Jeff Allen, Jay Howard. So he has paused there. We don't know about the future of Eric Berry at all. Total coin flip, just playing a waiting game there. Sean Smith, I've said over and over, I think he'll probably be gone. The way that the Chiefs keep the salary cap in a fair place during the future on the defensive side of the ball is you look at Justin Houston getting a ton of money, eventually probably Dontari Poe getting a large contract, and Ron Parker's getting paid right now. Eric Berry might be getting paid. We don't know still. But the reason that pans out okay is because D Ford is super cheap, and the corners, the set of corners the Chiefs have right now, Marcus Peters, Steven Nelson, the two rookies, Phillip Gaines, a second-year player who was not a first-round draft pick, but a third-round draft pick, those guys are young and cheap, and that's how this salary cap is going to play out for this defense, in my opinion. If you try to pay Sean Smith, you're going to lose a lot of other pieces. Derek Johnson, it's going to depend a lot on this season. I think we'll see him get a 1 or 2 year extension. Chase Daniel, he's been up in the air. He's already up in the air. I think we're going to see him walk. If he doesn't walk, I think we're going to have some bad news when it comes to what we're thinking about Aaron Murray. If Aaron Murray can't take over after one more season, that's going to be rough. DeVito, Donald Stevenson, Jeff Allen, and Jay Howard are hugely dependent on how they play this season. Now going into the next year, though, Brandon Kiley tweeted, Dontari Poe and Travis Kelce are the top free agents in 2017. My focus would be re-signing at least one of those guys before the 2016 offseason, and I could not possibly agree more. I would be more focused on signing Poe or Kelce before Berry, Smith, Derek Johnson, any of those guys I just mentioned. Kelce is going to be an enormous part of this offense. We know how Alex Smith and Andy Reid like to use the tight end. Travis Kelce is one of the true up-and-coming tight ends. I would be okay with taking a little bit of a gamble and signing him, you know, tomorrow, if that was an option, because I think he could have a season this year where he looks like the young Rob Gronkowski that I've talked about in the past. Where and there's a chance he gets hurt, there's a chance he falls off and doesn't get to those heights, and I would never say we should expect him to be Rob Gronkowski, but I think he could have a year this year where we could say he's going to be one of the top five tight ends at the very least for the next 5 years or so, and that's going to be a big chunk of change. I would almost rather pay Kelce now, give him a little bit of a guarantee, a little bit to lean back on, but then also be able to now have him locked up at a lower rate. So kind of what we were talking about with Justin Houston, get the deal done with a little bit more risk for a little bit better of a payoff for the Chiefs side of the ball. I would do that with Travis Kelce now. I think I would wait on Dontari Poe, maybe even through next season, because we've seen him wear down late in the season because he's had so many reps put on his body. I would like to see him play through the next 2 years before the deal is definitely done. And if he has to be franchised and we go through this Justin Houston deal again with Dontari Poe in the 2017 offseason, I'm okay with that. I can wait. If I'm in the Chiefs' shoes, let's lock up Travis Kelce in the middle of this season. Let's let Dontari Poe play out a little bit, because we got to see if he can actually continue through a whole season whenever he has somebody really helping to take some of those reps. I mentioned earlier that you can always get in touch with me on Twitter at JBBriscoe, B-R-I-S-C-O. You need to search Joshua Briscoe, I suppose. And that's exactly what Cameron Corwin at CameronCorwin61 did this week. He asked for some analysis on D Ford's contributions last year and what to expect this year on this episode, and I'm going to do that right now. Now, this is also a nice news story, because Tom Bahali on a Sirius XM NFL radio interview talked about D Ford a little bit and what he's expecting from him this year. This transcript is on Arrowhead Pride. Here's what Tomba said. He has all the attributes to play the position. They let me take a lot of reps off in OTAs and allowed him to get more reps under his belt. He's progressing as far as rushing the passer, and he has that. It's natural for him. It's a little technique here and there. In coverage, he's picking it up so well. He's another smart guy. The transition hasn't been hard. He's fast, he's strong, and he can run. He's like another Von Miller, one of those guys that's really small in the body and size, but can still rush the passer at a high level and play in coverage. D Ford is doing well. He's going to prove it this year. There's some high praise in there from Tom Bahali. Any comparison to Von Miller, even though he's a hated rival, is a good comparison. You would always take a Von Miller. And that's obviously a stretch, because D Ford hasn't done anything close to what Von Miller's done in the league so far. But Tomba saying he believes in what he's got, his physical tools for the position, is great. He's a smart guy. He's got speed. We know all of that. It's going to be just if he can turn it into stuff on the actual field. The interesting bit of news here is that Tamba's saying he's taking off quite a few reps in OTAs, or he has taken off quite a few reps in OTAs, and D4 picked up a bunch of them. I think that's very good for both of those players. Tamba Hali does not need extra reps in organized team activities, and D4 does. D4 needs every snap he can get. And so as far as it goes with analyzing D4's contributions last year, per Pro Football Reference, he got on the field in all 16 games. He had one pass defended. He had a sack and a half, three tackles, four assisted tackles. He did nothing last year as far as the stat line goes. Now, I do believe that we saw him make more of an impact throughout the season as he got more and more playing time and got used to the speed of the NFL, and I think we're going to see him this year doing quite a bit. Now, this is interesting. This is all speculation. Now, I also don't think that Tamba Hali is going to be pushed out of any high-leverage situations. I think D Ford is going to get much more playing time this year, and in a few cases to give Tamba a breather, and in a couple of cases, we'll see Tamba and D Ford on the field together, I'm sure of it, and have Justin Houston sit a couple of snaps. Not many for Houston. I think we will see Tamba sit a handful that Ford will pick up. But whenever I was first thinking about how these three outside linebackers are going to get on the field at the same time, I was taken back to the New York Giants in the Super Bowl. They call this package the NASCAR package, and I think they were the first team to do it. Since then, the Packers have dabbled in it a little bit. I think the Ravens might have for a little while, and the Seahawks have all taken this NASCAR package. And what it essentially is bringing in really fast pass rushers. And the Chiefs have three pass rushers: Houston, Ford, and Hali. Four or three of those quick guys there that can get to the passer with their speed in third and long sort of situations. I think we're going to see the Chiefs have a take on that this year. After the Colts playoff loss, I wanted Bob Sutton fired. I really did. I have no shame in that because that was a miserable train wreck of a defensive showing. But at this point, I believe in Bob Sutton for the most part, and I think Bob Sutton's going to do good things with the defensive line, which there are some questions on that defensive line. Dontari Poe is good but wears down. The defensive ends are slightly questionable, but that linebacking core, we know everything about. There are going to be times where it's DJ and then those three outside linebackers on the field at the same time. Maybe you put Ford in the middle, let him rush right off the edge of Poe. I expect to see almost exactly that, at least a few times this year, where Ford is in an inside linebacker position, or he's playing outside linebacker and Tamba is up playing in a more defensive end position, and those guys all just go get the quarterback. Now, Ford doesn't have the versatility that probably Houston and Hali both have, which where they can drop into coverage and you feel okay about it. Ford, we're still not sure about his ability in pass coverage. But I think we'll see those guys all on the field in several packages, and I think we'll see Ford get a few extra snaps, maybe at the expense of Hali here and there, but not enough for us to go, oh, look at this, Ford's taking over Tamba's job. Now, at the same time, by the end of the year, it would be good to say I have faith in D Ford as a starting linebacker, because we don't know if Tamba Hali is going to be back again after a season with the Chiefs, after this season. So, in the future, we want to see Ford in Houston starting. We want to see Ford earn that spot, but for now, for the 2015 season, keep an eye out for those three guys all being on the field at the same time, because I think they have some speed to really mess up some quarterbacks and some offensive lines. Speaking of some quarterbacks and some offensive lines, last time I talked about Alex Smith, everybody freaked out for a while, so let's just see if this happens again. Pro Football Focus and at PFF underscore Sam tweeted, QB rating when kept clean, when under pressure, and the change between the two brings some interesting numbers, and it's a chart that I've linked to in the article here on Arrowhead Addict. So this is about how quarterbacks behave when under pressure, where they are when they're not under pressure, and the difference between the two. Now, Alex Smith, with a quarterback rating of 104.5, is the eighth best quarterback in the league from last season, minimum 800 snaps when he is not under pressure. Minimum 800 snaps, 8th best quarterback in the league when not under pressure. Here are the names he's behind: Rodgers, Romo, Rivers, Flacco, Breeze, Brady, and Bortles. Blake Bortles took a huge hit when under any pressure at all, though. Now, Smith is around the 15th best of those quarterbacks when under pressure at all. So it's 8th not under pressure, about 15th when he is under pressure. However, with a minimum of 300 snaps that Pro Football Focus put into their chart, Smith dropped the 24th most among quarterbacks when put under pressure. His rating drops 35.9 points. Now, Ben Roethlisberger is the freak of this group, who actually got 13.8 points better when under pressure. He and Jay Cutler were the only ones who got better when under pressure. Zach Mettenberger and Drew Stanton both had very good showings as well. But so, Alex Smith, of these quarterbacks 300 or more snaps, dropped 24th, became 24th in football when, or 24th biggest drop in of quarterbacks in football when under pressure. But when he's not under pressure, he was top 10. And top 10 with Blake Bortles being one of the ones who is not as good as Alex Smith was next year. So, hear me out. With a hugely improved offensive line, which still has some holes, but the difference between Mike McGlinn and Ben Grubbs is enormous. The center position is either going to be Eric Cush or Mitch Morse, whoever wins that job. Left tackle Eric Fisher, I believe, is going to take a nice step forward. Right guard is going to be the winner of Zach Fulton, Paul Faniaka, or Jeff Allen. And then right tackle is the biggest question mark, in my opinion. It'll either be Donald Stevenson, Jeff Allen, or somebody else who's not on the roster yet. And Mitch Morse can step into any of those places in case of injury. So I think we can still say a hugely improved offensive line, a much more explosive set of weapons this season compared to last season. Alex Smith can absolutely be a top 10 quarterback this year. And if Alex Smith is a top 10 quarterback this year, then this Chiefs team is going to win the division. I said all through last season we saw two huge problems with this Chiefs offense. It was that Alex Smith didn't have time to get rid of the ball, and the receivers weren't getting open. And we don't know if it was the chicken or the egg in that situation. If the receivers not getting open made the line look bad, or if the line looking bad didn't give the receivers time to get separation. But the Chiefs attacked both of those places like they were both a problem, which they were. Doesn't matter which came first in that situation, because they both were there in a huge issue. The Chiefs have Chris Conley now and Jeremy Maclin, two guys who are going to get separation. DeAnthony Thomas and Albert Wilson are both going to improve at getting separation and running their routes. Everything's going to get better at wide receiver, and everything's getting better offensive line, because they attacked the offensive line because they knew it was the piece of meat that it was last year. The Chiefs attacked those two places to make Alex Smith better and to give Alex Smith a better situation to be in. When Alex Smith was in a good situation last year, again, the names around him were Rodgers, Romo, Rivers, Flacco, Breeze, and Brady. Alex Smith's name was in the middle of that pack. Whenever he wasn't under pressure, and whenever and Brady, Breeze, Flacco, Rivers, they all dropped under when they were under pressure more than Alex Smith did. So Alex Smith held up under pressure, even though he dropped 24th most. He didn't drop as much as Rivers, Flacco, Breeze, Brady, Bortles did. So no, Alex Smith is not Aaron Rodgers, and he's not going to be. He's not Andrew Luck. He's not Tom Brady. Everyone understands that. If you're still making that point, you've got to move on, because everybody gets that about Alex Smith. What the Chiefs are doing now is the best thing they could possibly be doing, which is saying, here's where Alex Smith struggles, and here's where he excels. Let's give him as many pieces that he needs, the kind of pieces that he can use, and have him in the most ideal Alex Smith situation possible. And with that situation, in the most ideal Alex Smith situation, which is what the Chiefs are building here, he's going to be very good. And he's not been in an ideal Alex Smith situation with any of his time here at the Chiefs yet. And the Chiefs have won double-digit games every season. Alex Smith's going to continue to get better. The situation is getting much better. Yes, there's a very legitimate question about Alex Smith being able to throw the deep ball. However, most of this team, Jeremy Maclin is the only pure deep ball threat that I would argue is on this team right now. And maybe DeAnthony Thomas could become one. I compared him physically to DeSean Jackson on the last episode. But Jeremy Maclin is the guy where you say, okay, can Alex Smith throw the deep ball to Jeremy Maclin? Everybody else is fitting exactly into Alex Smith's repertoire. Travis Kelce, Albert Wilson, DeAnthony Thomas, even Jason Avant still being around. Chris Conley. These are all guys who are fitting in a small, speedy type, or with Kelce, not necessarily small, but fast and in middle yardage routes, not field stretchers by nature. Those are the kind of guys that Alex Smith can really lift to their potential, and they can lift Smith to his potential. This is an offense that I think is going to build each other up as long as the offensive line holds up here. If the offensive line falls apart, honestly, none of this is going to matter, and we're going to wish the Chiefs had done something about right tackle. But I believe in the defense, and Alex Smith and these weapons around him, I think this stat supports it, and I think it's going to continue to build up this Chiefs team. I'm in a very scary place right now because I'm buying into Alex Smith and this entire Chiefs team pretty strongly right now, and I did not think I would be here a few months ago. Two more things to talk about here now. Over on SB Nation, they put together a list of who's building the next NFL dynasty. They have some categories and everything they use to come up with it. They listed the Seahawks, Ravens, Steelers, Packers and Colts as the main contenders there. That's all fine. They'll have the defenses, the weapons, the quarterbacks. That's not the point of this. The point is under their dark horses section, here's what they wrote in this paragraph. The first few are the closest to one player away from being among the league's best, in my opinion. The Chiefs have an excellent defense with elite pass rushers, some studs up front, and a talented secondary. They've got one of the best running backs in the league. They've got a strong GM from the Ron Wolf, Ted Thompson scouting tree, John Dorsey, who's added a ton of talent and depth to the roster over the last two seasons. They have a proven and highly respected coach in Andy Reid. He's honed his system over the decades in the NFL. I'm not looking to insult Alex Smith, who is efficient and works within Reid's system, but what kind of team would we be looking at if Kansas City had a top five, even top 10 quarterback under center? So the Chiefs in this situation are being listed as a team who is potentially one player away from being in a dynasty conversation. Now, I think that's a little bit deep in general. I think it's hard to say any team who hasn't won Jack in 20 years can be considered in a dynasty conversation at all. And that's what the Chiefs are. I'm sorry. They haven't won a playoff game in my lifetime. We can't talk about a dynasty. However, at least from a contender standpoint and then potentially a contender standpoint for the next several years, I just explained why I think Alex Smith actually has top 10 quarterback potential. Again, not top 10 quarterback where you put him in. If you're drafting quarterbacks to build a team around and you pick him in the top 10, because you probably wouldn't. You take shots on other guys. On that last list, Russell Wilson wasn't there as one of the best under-pressure quarterbacks. In fact, he was lower than Alex Smith was, had a lower drop than Alex Smith did. You would take shots on younger guys, I get it. I'm not saying you would draft Alex Smith as a top 10 quarterback if you're starting a new team. However, I think Alex Smith can perform as a top 10 quarterback in this Chiefs, Andy Reid, John Dorsey system, roster, etc. to keep the Chiefs as a contender for several years. Now, again, I refuse to start talking about a dynasty on any sort of serious level because this team hasn't won anything in 20 years. So I'm not jumping out that far, but I think again it's another position or another place where people are underrating Alex Smith because I think we're finally going to see him in a system built for him. One other bit of news: I mentioned other franchise players earlier in the show. Dez Bryant got a 5-year, $70 million deal with $45 million guaranteed from the Dallas Cowboys, and then just a few minutes later, Demaryius Thomas got a 5-year, $70 million deal, same as Dez Bryant, with a little less guaranteed, $43.5 million. I was really hoping that Demaryius Thomas would not get this deal and would hold out. The Chiefs play the Broncos in Week 2. The Chiefs will likely be without Sean Smith on a suspension for, I don't remember if it was DUI or substance abuse at this point. But to have no Sean Smith and no Demaryius Thomas would have been a pretty nice trade-off, in my opinion. But it's not going to happen. Thomas is around. Someone tweeted, though, this is interesting. So 5 years, $70 million. For Bryant and Thomas with around 45 guaranteed. Jeremy Maclin is 5 years, $55 million with a little under $23 million guaranteed. Now, I would rather have Thomas or Bryant for 5 years, $70 million and 45 guaranteed than Maclin for 5, 55, and 22. But that's a pretty fair curve there. And what Jeremy Maclin's position is going to be on the Chiefs is going to be much less than what Dez Bryant is going to have to carry the Cowboys offense with Tony Romo. Jeremy Maclin is just another piece on this Chiefs team, although he's the number one receiving piece, without a doubt. So I think it's just interesting to sort of compare those numbers, both for 5 years, but Maclin's getting $15 million less than Demaryius Thomas and Dez Bryant. That's going to do it for this episode of Roughing the Kicker here on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. Got to talk about all of this stuff with Justin Houston, the numbers, the opinions, what it all means. Looking at Tom Bahali and Dee Ford, where they're going to go, the future of Chiefs free agents. I say pay Travis Kelce sometime this year, let Dontari Poe play it out a little bit longer. Looking at the secondary, how it's all going to pan out. And of course, Alex Smith and talking about the D-word dynasty for a team that hasn't won a playoff game in my lifetime. So much to talk about and go through here. I think it's one of my favorite episodes of this offseason. If you're on board with this show, share it with the Chiefs fans in your life, friends, family, neighbors, enemies, whatever you may do. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe, suggestions for the show, things you want to hear talked about, things you want to have your opinions brought on these airwaves. I'd be glad to do it. Love to hear from you. Love to see this continue to spread. Grow this super smart community. And we'll be able to talk about Chiefs 24/7, which is basically what we do anyway. We can just do it like officially now, like a club.
Excuse me, sir.
Podcast.
Could you drop the bass?
Bye, Mom! Bass.